Long before Tenet traveled through time, sorry, temporally inverted, Guy Pearce strapped himself into a steampunk lazy boy to try to save his mannequin of a fiancé. Don't worry, Jeremy Irons shows up later in The Time Machine, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. I am here with two people who are just trying to vacation in Mexico. It's Camila Adams.
I forgot what movie was last week.
It's forgettable.
I was like, what did we watch?
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hi. We watched 10.
Right. I was thinking, did we watch The Perfect Getaway? I don't.
I tweeted. You know, when we were pushing the episode, like, so does anyone remember anything from this movie besides the Bo Derek running?
Right.
And someone replied, "Wait, that was from a movie." And I think they were seriously asking. They had just like assumed that was a swimwear commercial or like.
That
of the era, somehow a Marlboro commercial.
Right, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Than the entire movie.
Well, speaking of things barely making sense, the time machine. The only confusion, the confusion I had, I said last week, I remember having some kind of strong reaction to this movie when it came out, and having watched that, I don't know how that's possible. I do not know how this movie could have inspired any particular feelings of one kind or another.
Right. And I said last week that I thought I saw this and it was good. And I was like, hey, this is what time travel is supposed to be like. I have not seen this. I had not seen this movie. I don't know what I was thinking of because zero recollection of anything of this movie.
I was curious if it was because like they go hard on like time paradox invalidates time travel.
Right.
Here. So I thought that maybe you were one of the people who believes that about time travel. And so it made sense to me that maybe, you know, 20 years ago, Camila could have said, yeah, good for you, the time machine.
I mean, you know what? I do. I guess we'll get into it. But yeah,
okay.
I mean, but yeah, like I did not see this movie. And I think sadly, the movie I was talking about may have been Timeline with Paul Walker. It came out around the same time.
I remember that movie being extremely cool. Like, yeah. Exactly like this one, where it's, like, kind of cheesy and terrible,
right.
But way more fun than this one actually is.
Yeah, so now I'm going to have to watch that again to see what it is.
And now I'm going to have to watch that one again. They used to do this thing, like, when DVRs were first a thing, part of Comcast's DVR package was, you know, they had those on-demand movies, and they, on Wednesday nights that you could rent a movie for 1 cent. I was in college. I was living with four people in a two-bedroom apartment, the way you do when you're in college.
Right.
And we would always rent a 1 cent movie on Wednesday nights. So a lot of trashy B movies from 2003, 2004 are 1 cent movies in my heart, including Timeline.
Nice. I have a question. So you both watched it on Amazon Prime, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So the movie.
I watched it on Tubi because my Prime wasn't working that day.
Gotcha.
But...
Well, I got suggested right after it was like, maybe you'd like to watch Sahara.
That's what they suggested to me, too.
I was wondering why, because the movie art looks similar.
Because they're adventure movies. It's interesting they suggested it to you because I love the movie Sahara. When people do that meme of like, what's a bad movie that you genuinely think is good? That is my answer.
Really?
Like, I genuinely love that movie.
Huh.
I think it is a great romp. And so it's interesting that they actually connected them instead of saying like, oh, Robin, I know you watch Sahara a lot. Have it again.
Right. Yeah. I just didn't know if it was like something in my algorithm. I was like, that comes up, like, that couldn't be. I haven't watched that many Matthew McConaughey films on Amazon Prime.
Well, now we have to go around. Camila, what's a bad movie that you, or what's a generally thought to be bad movie that you think is actually good?
I can't even say on the top of my, off the tip of my tongue. I have no idea. I like a lot of Boondock Saints.
That's a great answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of plot holes. And there's a lot of bad writing.
Yeah, that is a poorly made movie that is an absolute delight.
Right, yeah, but I fucking love that movie so hard.
I don't even know if it's fair to say that it's poorly made, because how could it really be bad if it's so much fun to watch?
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, like, and it's one of those movies that, you know, again, like, you have to be at the right place at the right time to mm-hmm. have seen it for the first time, because it was another one of those pass it around. You know, I don't think yep. I heard of it until someone was like, hey, you're going to really like this movie. Here's the VHS. You should watch it tonight. And yeah, that's like, that's yes. how I found it. And it's got a special place in my heart.
Also, one of my favorite jokes ever on The Office was when there was like some kid and he's like, yeah, I love films. My favorite films are Citizen Kane and the Boondock Saints.
What about you, Sean?
I'm the only person in the world who rides for Forces of Nature with Sandra Bullock and Ben Affleck.
I love that
oh
movie
my
too.
Gosh!
Like the soundtrack, like we're the same. We're this like absolutely. Like I love the soundtrack of that movie.
You're the other one.
Yes. Yes. Let's start a cult.
The first two things I mentioned: the soundtrack and the cinematography, both yes. of which are excellent.
It's just amazing, and I was so jealous of her eye makeup in that movie. For the long, I know this isn't one of your top 10 reasons why liking the movie, Sean, but
I saw that movie in the theater. I don't remember it. And I remember not liking it, though. I guess that's the normal.
Oh my god, like there's this one scene that I really enjoy where they're in the airport when they first meet and Ben Affleck is waiting in line behind her and her and her husband at the time, and they're making out, and this shot is just like the way the music it like matches up to it, and they're making out and he's like, excuse me, let's get it moving, and they, you know, swivel around and just like she bends. It's just like, it's just a perfect shot. And just like with the timing of the music and everything. We're not here to talk about
it's nature. It's a little character actor fiesta too, like yeah. with Steve Zahn and Joe Pantoliano and right. Maura Tierney. Like it's got a good like roster of it's a legitimately good movie.
Yes.
I defy anyone, no, don't, because then you'll point out why it's terrible. But I've seen that movie 10 times.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, it's
fun. Yeah. It's so much fun. Yeah. Oh god, the scene in the rain and then the Sarah McLachlan song. Ah.
It is probably problematic now where they try to get money by Sandra Bullock offering to strip at the bar, and then they realize it's a gay bar, and Ben Affleck reluctantly strips but then gets into it.
It
actually works. Like, if it were a little more judgy, it wouldn't. But because by the end he's like, nope, I'm doing this. Bring me your dollar bills. It's right. Yes. Anyway.
So yeah. So
the time machine.
The time machine.
We just jump. Let's hop out of our time machine from 2001 or wherever, whenever Forces of Nature came out.
Well, here with a recap that we were promised is at least partially pre-written is Robin Hitchcock. Are you ready?
Process of writing it out when the Skype call came in, so it's about 80%.
All right.
We're going to do this.
We'll check the last 12 seconds or so. And go.
Okay, so Guy Pearce is an absent-minded professor, and his girlfriend gets killed, so he invents a time machine so he can go back and save her. When he does that, she immediately gets killed in a different way, and so he's just like, I guess it doesn't work. Time to go into the future and figure out why. It could have been a coincidence, buddy. But anyway, he goes to 2030 and he asks Jeeves, played by Orlando Jones, what time travel is all about. Orlando Jones is like, that doesn't exist. So he goes a little bit further into the future and a moon colony has blown up the moon, chaos everywhere. He gets back into his time machine to escape, gets knocked out by a piece of moon or something, and should have got an automatic transmission because the time machine ends up in the year 800,000-2071. I'm wasting time not being able to say words. 800,000 years in the future. That's a really far way away. future New York looks like the true, true parts of the Cloud Atlas. And Samantha Mumba and a little child show him around. And he's like, there aren't any old people here. Dun, dun, dun. There's some scary creatures who look like the Predator with the face of a little green man and the general aura of a bad taxidermy meme. Samantha Mumba gets kidnapped. Guy asks Jeeves how to save her. He says some more backstory. They go find Jeremy Irons, who has a brain all the way down his back. He's apparently the same species as the taxidermy creatures because they bred themselves into castes, whatever that means. They just talk and talk and talk, and then they have a fight. He turns the time machine on while Jeremy Irons is half in, half out. So the parts of him that are out of the time machine age into dust. And then he goes even further into the future, finds out that the bad guys are going to take over everything with their very bad architecture. And so he goes back, blows up the time machine to kill all of those bad guys, and miraculously none of Samantha Mumba's friends, and then just lives with her in the future. The end.
I mean... I think that was our longest recap ever, but I loved all of it.
Right, it was,
it was like a minute and a half, wasn't it?
Extremely entertaining.
Oh, it was a minute 44. I didn't know if we were going to make it under 2 minutes.
But, I got distracted by thorough... trying to say 802,701. And I probably wouldn't have been able to do it under a minute anyway. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
No, we needed
was,
all of that.
I know, it was worth
I mean, I watched this 2 days ago,
whole...
and I was like, Yeah, why though? So
I,
it was worth
the
entire minute and 45.
I can't believe it took me so long. So little happens in this movie.
Yeah.
Very little actually occurs.
Right. And it's maddening. And you're right, like the whole thing when you're talking about how he goes back, it doesn't work. She gets killed another way, and he's like, oh, guess it's not gonna work. Like, bro.
I guess it just won't work.
Can't we just give it two more tries?
Like she gets killed by a mugger, and then she gets killed by a carriage.
Like, as a scientist, he's absolutely like this. That's not how science, like, how
it
you were a fucked up scientist.
Right. It takes three to form a pattern, minimum. Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like, no wonder you're just like a has been, whatever. Nobody wants to hire you, or I don't know what the fuck. Is he a teacher?
The other thing. I do not understand what his actual professorship is about.
He was like trying to be a science Forrest Gump. Like, there's that moment where he's like, oh, my friend Albert Einstein, he's a patent clerk. Like, clearly he was like setting himself up as like, I know all the science people, and right, I am on the cutting edge of the future. But then things went awry. Could it be that he gave up and went to the future at that point? Because if you just kept showing scenes of her accidentally dying, it just would have been silly. If she had just, something had happened four different times.
So, yes, that would have been silly, for sure. But why not?
Yeah, exactly. And I was straining to, I feel like I just recently watched either a television show or a movie about somebody being forced to watch somebody that they love. Like,
there's an episode of Supernatural with that plot.
Yes, that's it. That's yes, what I saw. Like, being forced to watch somebody die over and over again, like a bunch of different times. That's what it was. And that was bugging the hell out of me. But yes, it could have worked. Like, I just needed two
that's
more times.
That's a great episode.
Right? I just needed two more times for it to make me believe that, okay, yes.
At least one. It just feels so silly that he's like, oops, I guess it won't work. Like, and that also, it's not that he's like, oops, I guess it won't work, I give up. He's like, oops, I guess it won't work, I better go to the future to find out why.
Right. Why?
Yeah, that left a lot to be, like, and oddly, again, it's kind of the Bill and Ted solution, much like
that's true
in Face the Music. They're like, well, we just got to skip ahead a little bit and try to see if later I know the answer. It's like, there's no reason to assume that's true, but go ahead. It'll drive the plot.
It makes a little bit more sense in Bill and Ted. I don't want to go down this road too far, but even if it makes zero sense, Bill and Ted are characters who are allowed to do nonsensical things, right? This is supposed to be a genius?
Is he?
Yeah.
He invented time travel.
Yes.
He did invent time travel. And I want to congratulate this actress for being the rare person to get fridged twice. It was not enough to kill off the female character purely to create emotional stakes for the male character. You get to do it two times.
Twice.
Congratulations.
It should have been three.
Yeah.
And then we were like, why weren't you fridged more? My objection was, like, if you went through all this, if your fiance dies, you invent time travel, you go back, she dies again. At that point, I'm just convincing myself it would have been a bad marriage. I'm just saying, you know what? We wouldn't have gotten along in the long run. Maybe. Facts. it's good to get to the facts-y segment, because there's one mind-blowing fact about this movie and two remarkable coincidences. The Time Machine was released March 8th of 2002. It was the seventh number one film of the year. Won its opening weekend with $22.6 million. There was one other new release. It was the Ice Cube and Mike Epps comedy All About the Benjamins, which debuted in third with $10 million. The Time Machine did not hang around. It immediately fell to fourth the next weekend with $10.7 million. Behind three debuting films, the original Ice Age, the original Resident Evil, and the completely forgotten Robert De Niro, Eddie Murphy movie Showtime, went 1-3 that weekend. It stayed in the top 10 for only 3 weeks. It earned a total of $56.8 million, 46th overall for the year. Officially, this is a remake. The original Time Machine was released July 22nd, 1960, directed by George Pal, starring Rod Taylor. That is not an excellent coincidence, but it is still worth noting that both of these movies starred an Australian guy playing American, so there's something. That version, the 1960 version, won the Oscar for Best Visual Effects. At the time, there would usually only be two nominees for that award, because not many movies had visual effects. It beat The Last Voyage. Shockingly, this version of The Time Machine, from 2002, is also an Oscar nominee. Here's the bizarre thing. It also was one of only two nominees. In 2002, there could be as few as two nominees
for makeup. Best
makeup.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, geez. The Time Machine was the only other nominee that lost to Frida. So that's mildly remarkable thing number one.
Unibrows beat Back Brain.
It had to be, because like that's purely for Jeremy Irons. Right. He's the only one with notable makeup.
Well, and no, the taxidermy creatures.
Those are animatronics.
What?
I'll get to it later. Okay. Jeremy Irons is the only notable makeup, and wow. He's kind of just Pinhead. Like, the longer that scene went on, I was like, no, this is just Hellraiser. Like, this is not an original idea. But kind of remarkable that both of these movies were one of two nominees in an Oscar category. And shocking that this is an Oscar-nominated film. The director of this film is Simon Wells. Until this point, he had exclusively directed animated films. He's the director of An American Tale, Fievel Goes West, Aww. We're Back, A Dinosaur Story, Balto. He directed The Prince of Egypt. So why did he suddenly jump from animation to live action?
I know why.
And direct this one? His name is Simon Wells. As in, he is the great-grandson of H.G. Wells, the 19th century science fiction author who wrote The Time Machine. That's the mind-blowing thing.
Walks in and he's like, hey, so here you're making a movie, and I just would like to direct you to my family tree, and this meeting is over. I'll wait for your call.
Right. Mic drop.
It's one of those things that simultaneously makes perfect sense, like what a cool connection, and no sense at all. Because even if you're a director of animated movies, like that is a completely different job than one directing live action, but two directing like big budget spectacle live action.
Counterpoint, so, Brad Bird.
Yeah, he's good though. Like
listen. A lot of people who have never directed anything before make amazing big budget films because it is a huge process with a million people involved, right? A lot of times people say things like, oh, well, it's really the second director directed the movie, things like that, whatever. Yeah. So if I were producing this movie and H.G. Wells' great-grandson walked in and he had any film experience at all, I'd be like, you're hired. Because I mean, aside from just the free press, like you're gonna get haunted if you say no.
But like, was there like was this even a marketing tool? I don't even.
But that's the thing. It's not like, oh, it's directed by H.G. Wells' great grandson. Well, now I'm going. It's at best. It's like, huh. Right. That's the end of what you get.
Right. What I just can't imagine them saying no.
When his name popped up, it was like, oh, I wonder if he's, and then just it passed like completely.
I never would have even guessed. I saw it just now when I was looking up the characters' names for my minute and 45 second long 60 second recap.
Well, it did not work out for them. He couldn't handle the job. With 18 days left in shooting, he left the production. Due to what the studio called extreme exhaustion, bailed on about the last third of filming, and they just, Gore Verbinski just came in and directed the rest of the way. Simon Wells kind of limped back in to complete the post-production and left directing for more than 9 years. He kind of like seems to have voluntarily climbed back down the ladder to where he was a story artist. He was a story artist at DreamWorks on everything big, all of the Shreks and Kung Fu Pandas, but like he took several steps back. He eventually directed Mars Needs Moms in 2011 and allegedly has something in production, but apparently this experience was just too damn much for him.
Well, bless his soul for recognizing it and not trying to subject us to anything else that was like, you know what, I could do better, and some other bullshit that ended up at box office number one.
I have a lot of trivia because this is a trivia heavy thing. As Robin mentioned, let's talk about the Morlocks. When they looked bad, they were CGI. If they were running and leaping, that was bad CGI by Industrial Light and Magic. It's 2002. This is what CGI looked like. Otherwise, they were actors in suits with animatronic masks made by the Stan Winston Studio.
Okay. So actors, that's the thing. Actors in suits with animatronic masks made by the Stan Winston Studio, to me, is makeup.
Makeup, to me, is a thing on a face.
Right. So they're wearing these masks that work on their own. That's not makeup to me. Either. It's
all right.
I don't know what Oscar a mask goes in, like costume design, probably.
Yeah, I don't know.
To add a don't bother to do this actors, Guy Pearce stubbornly insisted on doing his own stunts and even got pissy when he wasn't allowed to do stunts. His payoff for that was breaking a rib while tackling a Morlock in one scene.
That's what you get.
So
he seems like the type who'll get pissy about stupid stuff.
He really, I don't.
Yeah.
He is connected to Russell Crowe in my brain because of Australia and LA Confidential. So I just kind of think of him as like skinny Russell Crowe, which is maybe completely unfair. I don't really know anything about him.
Me either.
I'll circle back to it because this is the final point. And again, this is kind of a weird one. This would not have been a number one movie in America were it not for a 9/11 related delay. This movie was supposed to come out in December of 2001. Originally, the sequence where the moon breaks up had a scene where meteors were raining down into buildings in Manhattan. And so they delayed it to cut that scene and get it away and pushed it to March. Otherwise, it would have been a lost holiday release.
Oh, yeah.
Instead, it was a you know, fairly successful March release.
That's
so
9/11.
I'm glad that scene was cut, and I hope it's not on the DVD.
Well, the terrorists won.
But to that point, Guy Pearce, is this a good actor?
I was questioning that too.
I also can't figure out if he's good looking.
He's not. I was thinking of him as a very odd looking fellow in this film.
There were definitely moments when his face looked good to me. And I was like, wait, are you handsome?
Well, and I don't know what that was. Like, if it was like just poor makeup happening, like the lighting, because I thought it was like going to end up being like a thing, like the time travel had put some wear and tear on him as a human. Because like when he got the further in, he was looking pretty ragged and like dark circles and like skin was looking a little ashy. And then like a couple scenes later, like he's all brand new again. And I'm like, so I don't know what was happening.
I think he was dark circle skin ashy because he was like in a coma.
Got it.
Right. They don't really talk about how long it would take in his machine to go 800,000 years or 6 million years.
Right.
Like, is that a days long drive in the time jalopy?
Like, or is it a couple weeks? Or like, what happened? And how was he? And if that was the case, then he probably should have pissed himself several times and pooped his own pants.
That's a very good point.
Minor point, but if we're going to do a nitpicky time travel movie, if anyone had happened to put like a cabinet in the room in the hundreds of years while he was in there, would he have just exploded? Did this depend on no physical object sitting there at the point in time that he zoomed through it?
That's what that was one of my questions. I was like, so this thing is just kind of in this space. It occupies this space all throughout the years. So this is, yeah, you're right. Like if somebody had put something there, what would have happened?
It would be like in T2 when he comes back and then his little time bubble cuts out the corner of that truck.
Maybe.
I don't know.
See, this is why I don't do time movies. Time travel movies.
That said, this one has a moment that made me go, oh. When Jeremy Irons is like, you can't go back to save her because if she doesn't die, you never have the motivation to go back and save her. I'm like, huh, so look at that.
Here's the thing. That's what I said. I said out loud, like when we were watching it, like when he goes back to save her and I knew that it wasn't going to happen, that he wasn't going to be able to do it. I was like, well, you know, if this works, then what? Ba-da-da-da-da-da. And so, yes, this is why I can't watch Star Trek.
Right. And I try not to think about it too hard. I definitely, because I've watched T2 a million times, and I remember talking to my dad a million times about, like, well, wait a second. Listen, if they defeat Skynet, then Kyle Reese never gets sent back. And if Kyle Reese never gets sent back, then John Connor doesn't exist, mm-hmm. right? Which some of the future Terminator movies ran with and others ignored. And God knows what's going on in that series at this point.
Right.
My dad would always say, like, the past is the past. Regardless of what happens with time travel, he has the past experience of his wife or his girlfriend getting murdered in front of him. That motivated him to make the time machine. The time machine exists. Regardless of what happens to the timeline from then on, it still happened.
And that's another thing that I always kind of question about these time travel films is like, okay, so I go back into time. Does that now... It's just to me, like, does that remove me now? Does that remove me?
Right. Is there another Guy Pierce
right.
wandering around when he goes 2 years ago?
Exactly. Yeah. So like there's one that sticks out in my mind that I know for a fact that I really enjoyed. And I was like, you know what? You guys got it. Butterfly Effect. Because like that all made sense to me. It all kind of like came together. Also because I'm kind of like I subscribe to the belief of the butterfly effect that, you know.
Yes.
That everything, you know, changes and happens for a reason. That's one of the reasons why, like, these time travel movies just always, just, I overthink them too much.
I have fully committed to thinking as little as possible about time travel when I watch time travel movies. Or time
inversion.
Oh, but
you might actually enjoy Tenet.
I doubt it.
It'll probably make Ramen crazy. She'll climb the walls and just... the head explode. That will be the movie that breaks her. And I haven't seen it. I have no firsthand knowledge. It's just everything I've been hearing.
I'm not going into Tenet again. Except to say that the like assistant who tries to explain the plot for the first time eventually has to be like, yeah, don't try to understand it. Just feel it. And it's like, if you put that in your script, you fucked up. If you have to say to the character, really, to the audience, don't, you know what, just kind of, no, you that's failed. A bad movie. You did a bad movie.
You have failed.
Have we already had this conversation on the pod? Because I previously said, but you just said it was good in the Pickle movie when they made that joke. Like, I think there's a time and a place for this doesn't make sense, hand wave.
Yes.
There is. It's not Tenet.
Right.
Okay.
I would say it's comedy. Any movie with, any movie
that's
with
fair.
Seth Rogen. And it can get away with that. But a movie with Christopher Nolan trying to hold on to his precious baby so it can be seen in the theaters and, you know, try like fuck COVID and fuck your feelings and fuck your health. I'm going to release this bitch in the theater when we're not ready yet because I want you guys to live it. And I want you guys to feel it. No, you don't get that.
Right.
You don't get that. Mm-mm.
If you see it in IMAX, you won't get COVID.
Right.
That's the secret. Dolby sound kills the virus. Anyway, the time machine. Man, did this fall apart when we got to the old-timey future. Like, the fact that we couldn't hang around in the cool Blade Runner one where the moon is exploding. Like, oh, here's a visually interesting, engaging thing. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to go to an IMAX documentary about indigenous crafts. Okay, great. That's good.
That also, that kind of just made me sad. Like, the earth has been destroyed and it the earth has been killed basically, and now it has to nature is healing itself. And
nature
so it's
healing.
Starting all over again. Yeah.
I just kept like 800,000 years is such a long time. Like, I went and looked it up. Like all of human history is significantly less than that, even if you're including like proto-humans, right? This is like way, way, way more history than we can understand, which helps with some of the things that feel like they don't make sense, like New York City looking like Costa Rica, and maybe helps with like were the Morlocks and the other people all humans at one point?
Yes. At some point they decided that they evolved differently. So that makes sense for the Morlocks. It doesn't make sense for there to be basically undistinguishable humans who still speak English because there's still written words from 800,000 years ago lying around.
Right.
Because Tiffany paid for product placement.
Yeah. And there's no way, like, we're not going around, like, doing fucking, like, cave drawings and stuff just for shits and giggles and, like, teaching all of that. It doesn't make sense to me. And I guess the thing was that the Morlocks, they live underground, and that's why they evolved as such, why they look like that.
And because they bred themselves specifically.
Gotcha.
You know, they like eugenicized out strong people who run like gorillas and brain back people who just sit around and villain monologue. Okay, I got the actual figures. So 800,000 years is 4 times the current span of human existence and 130 times the duration of human civilization.
Huh.
But Orlando Jones' iPad screen is hanging in there just fine.
Dude,
and
yep,
is powered somehow.
Right, thank you. That was another question. It's like, where's the electricity coming from? Like, where?
I assume they have solar power. The sun didn't blow up, just the moon.
It's like he would have been gone a long time ago.
I also really want to know more about the moon blowing up and what exactly that, like,
we just kind of breeze over that.
Right, like sort of. I think Jeremy Irons says like after the moon blew up, we couldn't stay above ground. Like, but why? I just want to know more. They leave out some of the most interesting stuff.
Now, I did doze off for a few minutes, and did I miss an explanation of where all the old people are?
They got killed by
Get caught and eat.
Yeah. They get caught
and eat. And it's not like they're specifically going after old people. I think it's just a, like, we have low life expectancy because we're hunted.
Gotcha. I thought it was going to be more like a midsummer type thing. Like
I don't think so.
It's like, they know that we'd have no use for them, so, you know, at age 60, they just toss themselves off of one of these cliffs.
The non-Morlocks were not too bright. I mean, listen, people of the future, if a white guy from the 13th to 21st century shows up one day, throw him in the river. Yeah. Don't debate whether or not to throw him in the river. Go ahead. No good is going to come from this man.
Like, you don't need him. And let's talk about the fact that how he was so quick to just give up everything and just be like, yes, this is where I belong. I am ready to, I have bonded.
There's a new woman I would like to have sex with, and I'm going to stay in her time.
Right, and I get it. You know, Samantha Mumba's pretty hot. Whatever.
She's very hot.
And, you know, all of her clothing, all of her costumes were cut just so. So she,
right,
to make sure.
Lack thereof.
Right, to make sure that she was a seductress, but not. So, but yeah.
She's also like 20 years younger than him.
Yeah, I don't know how old she is in this film, but.
She is a pop star of some kind. I looked it up and was like, she had a number 4 hit in this country, and I'm like, I have no recollection of this person.
She has a song that I really enjoy. Gonna tell you, I think it is. Don't wanna love you if you don't love me.
Yes, that song's amazing.
Right? That is my shit. Like, to this day, when it pops up on my playlist, I'm like, yes. So I don't know about how many other songs that she had released over here in the U.S., but that's the one that I know her from.
And she was like an it girl for a brief moment. Like, she might have been like on the Vanity Fair Hollywood cover. Like, it was definitely like up and comer Samantha Mumba.
Right.
And then it didn't happen.
Well, I think what had happened was, like, it was, again, like with Hollywood and anything else, like, we always like we throw out like 2 or 3 of the same thing and see which one sticks. So, like, well, Samantha Mumba, Christina Milian, and Rihanna. And we all know which one won that battle. So, like, they all kind of came out at the same time. And then, like, Samantha was like, eh. She just kind of fell back in the background. Christina hung in a little longer, but then, you know, Rihanna took the crown. So,
yeah.
I had no idea that she was Irish either.
I forgot that.
Successful accent hiding and I am amused by the thought that she just hangs around pubs in Ireland now, being vaguely recognizable. That's right?
That makes me happy.
Charming. Yeah.
Can we talk for a second about the last scene in the movie? What is going on in that scene? Why does it happen? It's like he is walking her through the part of their true Costa Rica, New York, where he thinks his apartment was.
Yeah.
And then they like map on his buddy from the Full Monty and Emma Thompson's mom walking through his actual apartment.
Right.
And it ends there with like these two very minor characters from the original timeline making a deal about their own childcare arrangements. And it's like, why is this the last scene in the movie? And I wasn't sure if that was maybe like some kind of fealty to the book. I understand this is a loose adaptation.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. The only thing that I caught from it that may have been poignant was him throwing away his bowler hat, because his friend was all like, you need, don't be another bowler hat and a bunch of bowler hats or whatever. And so it was just like his little nod to, you know, I hope you're finally happy, which I didn't think that he was exactly unhappy. I mean, yeah, his fiance was killed, but it didn't seem like his life was that terrible.
He's just so not a character to start, which is like, I think that, you know, like the real problem with this movie, it reminds me of The Deep. Like, I do enjoy this movie as like a piece of like, you know, a little sci-fi action romp, right? That's fun. I like that stuff. It kind of feels like an episode of Star Trek, honestly. But I don't care about Guy Pearce.
Oh, I have no.
I really feel like I only care about Samantha Mumba because of her charisma.
She's
and
so cute.
Like, she doesn't have a character. She doesn't
and
get
her
to
excellent
do anything.
Skin. Let's not deny that part of the appeal
and
is
her excellent face and body and all of that.
My
like,
God.
She's definitely the person who I was the most interested in, but they weren't really giving me anything to work with.
Right. Yeah.
Orlando Jones tries really hard.
I mean,
I remember when
delightful.
He was a thing. What happened? Like, he was everywhere for 4 seconds.
Well, I think
he's a TV actor.
Yeah, the last thing that he was on was, I don't even remember.
American Gods.
Yes, thank you. And I think there was some sort of blowout that happened there where he, I don't know specifically. I don't know if he called out somebody's racism or what. And it spoke very publicly about it for a long time. So he could be like lightweight blacklisted right now, or he could be like purposefully just laying low. But yeah, you're right. Like, he was like everybody, like he was Sleepy Hollow. I really enjoyed him on that for the season that I watched.
Oh, Sleepy Hollow rage resurfacing.
I always picture him in
7-Up
Evolution, but Evolution, the like the alien comedy with where he and David Duchovny were the leads. That movie is unremarkable. It just sticks in my mind because I'm like, how much did David Duchovny hate himself? Where he was like, I'll do an alien movie. I don't even care. It's just, I know my entire existence has been getting away from aliens for 5 years. I've given up. Give me the money.
He needed to pay for some sex addiction therapy or something.
Did either one of you catch him when he was performed live here in Pittsburgh?
No.
Because I did.
I was at...
How was it?
I didn't...
It was like, like watching your dad like and his friends just like hang out. Hey, guys, we got some songs we want to play. Like,
he's always seemed like such a sad person.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. And I don't even know how I came about the tickets, because I sure as hell didn't buy them. Somebody gave them to me. I think some random person called me and was like, hey, David Duchovny tonight at wherever. And I'm like, okay.
I didn't go to that. I went, he was doing Wizard Worlds on the condition that someone would let him play a concert in the city that the Wizard World was in.
Shut up. Are you serious?
So he, like, I was at that Wizard World and I was like, oh, if I go to this, then I can be like, oh, wow, I'm in a room with David Duchovny without having to hear him try to play music. That was the way to do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, the time machine.
So the time
but Jeremy machine. Irons is fun. That
Jeremy Irons. Okay, here's something I want to know. Jeremy Irons and Nicolas Cage both won Oscars for Best Actor in the 1990s and have gone on to have ludicrously campy careers.
Jeremy Irons?
He won for Reversal of Fortune in 1990. Are you counterpointing that he hasn't had a ludicrously campy career?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I follow him very closely, so I mean, I'm just surprised that his career has gotten campy, if that's the case.
He was also in the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I was including his voice work as Scar. As
I mean, campy that's like the number one thing that I'm always like, yeah, Scar.
Me too.
I mean, you know, he's Alfred. He's the most recent Alfred those couple of Batmans.
He was on a show called the Borgias. I remember seeing about it.
The Borgias.
Borgias, yeah. Was that
he did some serious stuff, but also
The Man in the Iron
Mask and Dungeons and Dragons and Kingdom of Heaven, Casanova.
Listen,
the Pink
dude's
Panther
been working
2,
hard.
Beautiful Creatures, that teen movie that no human being saw. Assassin's Creed. Yes, it is true that he went weird.
Yeah, I guess
so. What's up with that?
That's odd. I mean, does he like get more? Does he do? He seems like the type that maybe he does. He gets his fulfillment, his artistic fulfillment from like Broadway. Like he's out there doing actual plays and things of that nature. Like perhaps he is over doing the theater in London somewhere.
I love that voice.
Although, again, like I said, I don't know much about Jeremy.
Jeremy,
I think you're right. A-plus reference. I don't think you can trick a psychic guy. The climax of this movie hinges on Guy Pearce subtly, like, gotcha to the psychic guy who knows what you're thinking and what you're going to do.
Right.
I don't think it works like
that. It would have made more sense if he accidentally hit the time gear.
Right. Yeah.
Is so clearly something that they were like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if he kills him by putting him in the time machine and aging him? And they didn't really think of how that would work or why that would make sense. They just ran with it.
Because I was confused. I was like, is he going forward or backwards? Why is this happening? What's going on?
Right. And like, again, with the whole, like, what if you put a cabinet there? Like, is his body just flinging through space in increasingly dusty form?
Yes, exactly. It's like somebody is just hanging out there.
At every point in time, there's one little blip where it goes, boop, and he's there.
Like Fight Club, where Tyler Durden.
Right. It stuck out because I saw two movies in the same day that involved tricking a psychic person. I did a drive-in double feature of They Live and Village of the Damned.
Oh, nice.
They advertised the original Village of the Damned from 1960. I was hyped. I was like, yes, this is a sci-fi influential classic. Not it at all. They were showing the 1995 John Carpenter version of Village of the Damned. Which I was still like, I mean, I'm here. I'll watch it. I've never seen it, sure. But it's not nearly as good. And the climax of that movie, Village of the Damned spoilers, the climax of that movie is just Christopher Reeve desperately trying not to think that he has a bomb that'll blow the kids up.
You're like, thinking of like a brick wall.
He's thinking of a brick wall. And the kids are like, why are you thinking of a brick wall? Clearly you're trying to hide something. And it's just him making more and more aggrieved thinky faces while their eyes glow brighter at him until they finally break down his mind wall with 2 seconds left and look at the bomb and then it all blows up. Oh, it's a bad ending. Mark Hamill plays a sad-eyed priest. It's weird. Don't watch it. But if you end up somewhere where you unintentionally watch it, like I did. On that note, let's rate The Time Machine. We didn't even talk about how everyone dies of time lasers at the end. Anyway.
Dude. Yeah, okay.
Time lasers.
Yeah, time lasers.
Kill you, but not if you duck?
It was a big question mark in my brain. And I'm like, you know what? Whatever. Sure. Sure. Great grandchild, it was down.
I didn't hate it, all of it, but 36. Let's say 36.
Wow. I am extremely generous in comparison to that.
Me too.
Oh,
Camila,
wow.
Where are you at?
No, I mean, I was like, this is bad. Like, I can pick out things I enjoy, but it is a bad movie.
64. Like, actually, I wouldn't mind watching it again. Like, there were aspects of it that I... Just for the simple fact of, like, the explanation of, you know, well, you wouldn't have been motivated to make the time machine. I was like, yes, thank you. And then also I really like the effects that they did around him traveling and Samantha Mumba's skin. So, you know, there's that.
I gave it a 56. Similar reasoning to Camila. Like, this is not good. I enjoyed watching it.
Right. Yeah. Like, it was fine. Like, there was a lot of, like, if somebody were to put it on, or if I, you know, again, I was like, you know, I'm sure I wouldn't leave the room. I wouldn't.
I think it works better as an 18-year-old movie. I feel like if I went to the theater to see this in 2002, I'd be like, come on.
I would have been pissed.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I definitely saw it like on HBO shortly after it came out, but it's that level of, like, if you have any buy-in on this movie, you're not going to like it.
Right.
But if you just happen to watch it, I think it's enjoyable.
Yeah, it's one of those like, oh my God, it's Sunday afternoon, it's on HBO. Sure. Why right. not?
Oh, that leaves us at a 52. 52 is the final score. We continue mediocre September with a long streak of movies that land right about there. That's
right.
Within a point of where we landed on 10. Yeah, wow. 10 was a 52 and a third, and The Deep was a 50. So we're, hey, again, were you around last month? There were two Transformers and a Ninja Turtle. This is fine.
Still right. Still better than Transformers and Ninja Turtles.
Is the MPAA bullshit? The Time Machine was rated PG-13 for intense sequences of action violence. Yeah, sure. It's not a PG and it's definitely not an R.
Intense mm-hmm. sequences of action?
Action violence.
Oh, action violence. It's like, what does that mean? Like, you have to, the people are running more than 10 miles per hour. And that's just
oddly, I don't think they rate for emotional violence, you know, like,
right?
There's no PG-13 for hardship suffered mentally. Like, no, it's,
yeah,
it's...
that should absolutely be included. There's been a few movies that just like fucking buried me.
This is the correct rating. The MPAA is doing okay. Like, they we've only called bullshit 4 times out of 11. I'm going to continue this segment, but they're a little more reliable. Really, they should be getting it right all the time.
Well, yeah, that's true, but we would have thought that they'd be as wrong as often as not. I think it helps that most of the number one movies in America are PG-13, and PG-13 is a generously wide rating. So
right. Yeah. The bingo card.
I don't see anything
There's nothing on the bingo card. Nothing.
No, the moon exploding is a natural disaster.
It explodes because they're digging for the moon colony. It's a industrial accident, not a natural disaster.
All right.
Here's what I will argue because it would give me a bingo.
Okay.
If we had a movie where someone mined and it caused an earthquake, you would say that's a natural disaster.
I don't know if that's true. I think that's an industrial accident. Like the wildfire that's going in California right now, is that a natural disaster or is it a gender reveal party explosion gone wrong?
I interpret disaster to mean Earth is killing us.
Right,
it doesn't matter who started it.
I think you're right, Sean. I will go ahead. I will allow it.
All right.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Way to go, friend.
Yeah, that was a murder, natural disaster, the Tony Goldwyn space, and legitimate MPAA. It was an easy one, but
we'll take
I'm happy to finally have a bingo.
Yeah, and plus, like, we moved through that one quickly. Like, that wasn't, we weren't lingering on this one too long. Excellent.
I get a veto because I have not had an extra veto yet this year except for the split one. Does the veto even feel like safety anymore? Because every time I think about playing a veto, I'm like, it could get worse though.
I don't know.
Got to be conservative. Robin was right with it all along. Robin's like, only play it if you mean it was the right strategy all along.
Right.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I know we're already on the long side. At least two of us, sorry, Camila, watched I'm Thinking of Ending Things. I am very curious to hear your reaction. It's been 5 years since I sat down and watched Anomalisa and said, this is the best movie of the year. And everyone else in the world was like, what the fuck are you talking about? So now there's another Charlie Kaufman movie. And I'm like, that was really good, but I don't trust anyone else to like it. This might just be a my brain thing. So, Robin.
I have to say I liked it more than Anomalisa because I hated Anomalisa. And I can't believe, Sean, that you, I mean, I can believe it. It makes sense. But the fact that you and I became friends right at the time that Anomalisa was terrorizing Oscar death racers like me, and you were like, yeah, movie of the year. I can't believe that I wasn't like, nice knowing you, but I'm glad I did it. You know, I was nervous about this movie for obvious reasons, and it's fine. Your comparison, Sean, go ahead and make the comparison that you made to me.
What did I make to you? I don't.
You said
now
this
you
is
make
how
it.
You feel about Mother.
Right. This is how I feel about Mother. In that I'm like, I'm pretty sure that no one else should, I'm not going to tell anyone else to watch this because right. it's so weird and off-putting, but it just works for me. And so I kind of love it, but won't, you know, be like, oh, you should really sit down and watch this.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. I didn't hate it. There's things in it that are interesting, but I think that maybe if it didn't have Charlie Kaufman baggage attached to it, I'd be more interested in trying to figure out exactly what it's trying to say. But I'm like, there be dragons, so I'm not going to go down that road. And instead, I'm just going to be like, oh, well, that was kind of weird and messed with me. And I laughed out loud a bunch. Like, it's very funny.
Yeah, it's very funny. The cast is great. It has a lot of scenes that really work. If I'm not looking at Charlie Kaufman as an auteur whose ideas spring forth in a perfect font of absurdity, it's kind of just like, oh, you watched Twin Peaks season 3 and Hereditary and then made one of your movies immediately after watching those two things. Like, it's very like, here's a couple David Lynch scenes. Here's Toni Collette in a creepy home setting. Go. But this is just so in line with the kind of weird I like. I mean, when you're, if you're aping David Lynch, you're probably going to make me like it. And since I already am on board with what he's doing right now, right now being, you know, the last decade, apparently, it totally worked for me. I don't think that many people are going to love it, but I love it. And I will watch it again because something about these clicks with me, like you with Mother. If people don't know what we're talking about, and yes, this is a very inside what we know about each other conversation.
I love Robin the movie Mother.
Robin loves the movie Mother largely because of an interpretation of it that is not what the creator says the movie is about. That's exactly how I feel about Anomalisa, where I'm like, this is what this movie is about. No one but me thinks that, including what Charlie Kaufman and the producers say that that's about.
People think what I think about Mother.
Yes, yes.
Which, for the record, is that it's about the way that male artists are, is basically what I think Mother is about, and just gendered ideas about creation.
It's certainly that unintentionally.
Yes.
I think I'm thinking of Ending Things is about how in a vacuum, the male mind can't help but create bullshit fantasies of self-importance. So, I see both this and Anomalisa as critical of typical male bullshit, when you can definitely interpret them that they're defending typical male bullshit.
So I thought that they really were trying to make the woman the main character of this. And the thing that I kept worrying about, like when her name would change, I was like, oh God, is this really about men? Is this really about what men do and what men think? Because my one criticism was like, she's kind of acting like a dude. Like, I think we talked about this a little bit with the High Fidelity TV show, which I haven't watched the whole series. I just watched the first episode. But one of the things I read some TV critics say is that, like, she has toxic masculinity as a characteristic, and she's a woman. And I'm like, well, that exists in the real world. That's a thing. But yeah, that's how I felt about the main character. And I'm thinking of Ending Things is like, you have dude problems. And just because you put dude problems into a female character doesn't, like, get you off the hook for your gender bullshit.
My love of both this and Anomalisa involves a lot of me deciding that the gender bullshit isn't bullshit, but I wouldn't in these specific movies. But I would not argue hard that I'm right about that. It's clearly one of those just I want this to be true kind of arguments.
Yeah.
If you liked Anomalisa, if you're one of the seven other humans who liked Anomalisa, you'll probably like this. I saw Mulan and I thought it was fine. And
I didn't see Mulan because it got terrible reviews. People started talking about how, like, watching a movie made in China means you support genocide, which I don't want to unpack that right now, but it definitely makes me pause on spending $30 on a movie that no one really seems to like.
I didn't watch it because I don't care.
Yep. What do you care about?
I didn't even see the animated Mulan. I watched two old movies that were new to me. And one of them was because we had a blackout one night, like when it was storming really badly and like all the power went out for like 7 hours. And all I had was my tablet was charged with my Amazon, whatever. And the Amazon Prime, I didn't know this. They download a couple movies to your device every month or so. It's like a different movie. It's like, hey, you know, you might like this. Just go ahead. You know, you'll have that on this tablet for now. you know? And I'm like, oh. And so one of them was Clue. I had never seen Clue before. I thought I had not, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Tim Curry, like, bless his soul. Like, I've like, my introduction to him was Annie, him as Rooster. But, same. You know, always, like, he's always a delight, like, when he pops up anywhere. And, yeah, like, I really liked it a lot. And the other movie was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I have never seen any of the Bill and Ted movies.
And what'd you think?
It wasn't as bad as I anticipated.
Okay.
Because the reason why I never watched it was, I guess, around that time, it just really didn't attract. It wasn't really like, it didn't appeal to me. I wasn't mm-hmm. really like into Keanu Reeves at that point in time or anything like that. And also like that whole Beavis and Butthead, that surfer dude, Wayne's World kind of thing. Like it really kind of grates on my nerves after a while. Mm-hmm. And but watching it this time, it's like, oh, they're not as bad as Beavis and Butthead, and they're definitely not, you know, also they're a little more intelligent than Wayne's World as well. So I was like, okay, you know, I can get into this. And so yeah, like I enjoyed it. It was very cute, and they weren't as surfer dude and stupid. They weren't stupid.
They're simple, not stupid.
Right, exactly. And I think stupid characters really bug me, like Homer Simpson and Peter Griffin or whatever from Family Guy.
So, I think that's his name.
But yeah, I look forward to watching the second and the third one.
Well, listen to the Bill and Ted arc on the Keanu review featuring yes. Robin Hitchcock.
That's right. Please do.
Unsolicited endorsement, just because I've just listened to the third one today, and it's been a joyous celebration of Bill and Ted.
Nice.
Thank you.
Man, They Live is a good movie. Like, I'm not going to go. This is the second time I've brought up They Live on this show in the past month. So, like, we're not going to go hard. But having watched it again, beginning to end, I didn't realize that this is a great movie for now. It's like, don't trust the police. Capitalism is a tool of control. The media and the power elite are trying to keep us asleep. Like, this is a very current movie from 32 years ago.
Wow.
Rewatch They Live. And no matter how long you remember the fight scene being, it's longer than that.
It's so long.
Roddy Piper? So wow. Okay.
Roddy Piper and Keith David. I'm biased as a wrestling fan, but really? Like the fact that Roddy Piper didn't become a bigger star is a travesty. He's so good in that, and charismatic and good looking and strong and big. Like, he could have been in every action movie for 10 years.
Why didn't that happen? Is it because he's a jerk?
No, people generally like him. I think he, you know, Hell Comes to Frogtown kind of bombed, and he kept like going back to wrestling and the money, you know, he was getting plenty of money for wrestling. So like it just never really, you know, the momentum never really got rolling.
Yeah.
God rest his soul. Let's draw a movie. As a reminder, there's one veto. It's mine. Power. But I've learned power. And I'm always not going to play it unless it's really, really important. The number is 903. That is Purple Rain. If it had been 1 week, I'm 1 week away from that being at the drive-in. Oh, it's the most joyous draw since Speed. That's what it is.
I gotta say, like, I feel good.
Oh my God, I can't.
My heart is swelling. I feel good. I haven't watched this movie since I was a kid. I'm so excited.
I've never seen it.
Whoa. Oh my God.
Wait, yes. Yeah, speaking of like bad movies that I genuinely love, Purple Rain.
We're going to have to talk about this next week because I'm not sure I'm ready to call this a bad movie.
Oh my God. My heart is so full right now. I don't even know what to do.
That is exactly the feeling, a full heart.
I don't know what to do.
I have the soundtrack. I love Prince. I've seen Prince in concert. I just, like the moment never happened. And I might have been going next week. It's at one of the drive-ins as Risky Business and Purple Rain.
Oh, nice.
So it might have happened in a week, but
oh my God.
What? This is, you know, Tony puts us through a lot, and it's to make these moments better. It really is.
Yes.
Oh, so lovely. Well, we're gonna ride this glow into the evening, but not before I ask, on March 8th, 2002, when The Time Machine was released, what was the number one song in America?
Was it a Ja Rule song?
Ja Rule was certainly there.
J-Lo?
And J-Lo? Yes. On Time?
Which one?
What was
no?
it?
No.
Is it My the other Love one. Don't? No, that wasn't it. Damn, what is the name of that song?
I'm Real.
Yeah.
No, still the other one. Remember, this is the year where the number ones go Ja Rule featuring Ashanti, Jennifer Lopez featuring Ja Rule, Ashanti, Nelly, Nelly featuring Kelly Rowland, Kelly Clarkson, Nelly featuring Kelly Rowland. Like, it's a very samey year. But there's the one other Jennifer Lopez featuring Ja Rule.
I'm just hearing him yell incoherently in my brain. Like, I.
That's how it begins. Like, I just listened to it. Like, it's one of those that, like, the beat kind of comes in and then Ja Rule is screaming. There's no verse, there's no hook. Here he is.
I might have.
Can we get a hint? Is there a hint available? It's going to bother me if I don't get this. And I'm blanking on other J-Lo songs.
The first word would get you marked down in a second grade grammar class.
Ain't?
Correct.
Ain't it funny?
Ain't it funny? Did someone say that earlier?
No, you said.
I think that was my first guess.
Was it?
No, I thought your first guess was Always on Time, which is Ja Rule featuring Ashanti. Yes. And then made our way through I'm Real.
Right.
All blurring together. Okay, yeah. So Always on Time does not have J-Lo in it.
No, that's Ja Rule featuring Ashanti.
Got it.
Oh, 2002.
Right. And officially, it's Ain't It Funny Murder Remix.
Oh.
Yeah. And Murder Remix is just a funny phrase when you look at it for long enough.
Number one movie in America.